Boom, boom, boom. All right. What up? This is the boy Denz from the OBGM. So you can catch the ends out on October 30th, 2020 this year. You are listening to The Vinyl Guide with Nate Goyer.
Well, thanks for that, Denzel. And hey, everyone who's listening, this is Nate. I hope you're all well. It's another weird week and a string of weird weeks. Lots of people stressed, lots of people concerned for the future. And I hope you're finding a way to be able to cope with all the news as best you can. To me, music and family is my go-to cure for these frequent bursts of bad news. And of course, records are at the center of my self-healing routine. Absolutely transports me to a happy place. And I certainly hope this podcast is giving you a bit of peace in your own worlds. Today, I'm going to be sharing an interview I recently had with Denzel McFarlane of the band The OBGMs. Now, I know many of you right now are asking yourselves, who are the OBGMs? Well, that's a fair question. The OBGMs are a punk rock band, a three-piece out of Toronto, Canada, and their upcoming LP, The Ends, is an absolute killer. I urge you all to have a listen. In fact, I'm going to play a track on the show here in a moment. Today, Denzel and I talk about the journey of the OBGMs, what it's like to be in a black-fronted punk rock band in the year 2020, his songwriting, his process, his influences, playing live, and what the future looks like for the OBGMs. Now, again, the new album is absolutely stellar. Lots of energy, lots of great songwriting, many, many hooks, and more, which are constantly making me put this album on repeat. And of course, there's a limited vinyl run of The Ends, just 250 splatter vinyl copies, which you can order from theobgms.com. I'd recommend you reserve yours quick if there's still some available. And this week's show is brought to you in part by AudiophileUSA.com, the online record shop for the world. AudiophileUSA.com only sells excellent and near-mint vinyl records, and they ship worldwide. Find your holy grail at AudiophileUSA.com. They're always getting new stuff. Check their website frequently or sign up for their mailing list, and they'll let you know what's new so you can get first dibs. That's AudiophileUSA.com. And we're also sponsored in part today by the Groove Washer Record Cleaner. Clean your records with the best and safest and most reliable fluid and gear. GrooveWasher.com has all new fresh bundles on their website that will make your vinyl life complete, including the new Mondo Groove Washer Bundle, which contains everything you need. Plus, take 10% off everything from GrooveWasher.com by entering checkout code VinylGuide10, and that makes an even better deal. That's GrooveWasher.com, promo code VinylGuide10. So, all right, let's get into this week's conversation, the Vinyl Guide interview with Denzel McFarlane of the OBGMs.
Let me cough for a second so people don't think I have COVID because I have allergies, actually. Okay, good. Ready to go.
Are you wearing masks up there in Toronto, Denzel?
Oh, definitely wearing masks here in Toronto, absolutely. We're trying to take every precaution. There's a death virus outside, you know, so we got to make sure we stay safe and make sure other people stay safe.
Look, I got to tell you, Denzel, this album, The Ends, when I listen to this album, I get goosebumps. It's the same sort of feeling that I've got when the first time I heard bands like Off or Black Flag. So I really look forward to watching your guys' career closely.
Honestly, man, I really, really, really appreciate that comment, man. We wanted to make something timeless. I think we did. And a pandemic's not going to stop us. We're going to put this out and hopefully people feel the same way you do.
The pandemic's obviously had to have the whole world tap the brakes a little bit. How's it impacted the OBGMs?
Well, OGMs have been severely impacted by this because a large part of our plan was to kind of get on the road and show people what we're about. Outside of making like good music on record, we do live shows. Like we're one of the best acts really on stage, and we can't do that. Like a lot of other acts, we just can't do that. We can't show people what this is like. But there has been a blessing in this. The big part about the pandemic is I had a lot of time to reflect and figure out how to stay involved with art and how to still be a champion for my art and my causes. And I'd learned how to edit video. I learned how to edit music videos. I learned how to edit content. And we're still pushing, man. People are still finding out about us because of it. And we got to go hard. No matter if it's a pandemic, epidemic, whatever it is, we're going to go hard.
Now, this album, I'm assuming it was recorded in 2019. Are you guys self-financed? Do you have a label behind you? How's it come together?
Yeah, man. We got an independent Canadian label named Black Box Recordings supporting us. This particular album we did with producer Dave Schiffman, who can I swear in this?
Go for your life.
He's a motherfucking man. Dave Schiffman is the best because he's really done a lot of great work with a lot of great artists, and highly recommend him for anybody. He did a Strumbella's record, Pup record. What else has he done, man? He's done some Weezer stuff, Mars Volta, you know, like Atlantis, like great to work with a guy. Red Hot Chili Peppers, really works great to work with this guy because he just has no sounds. He just really embeds into what you're trying to do and helps lift it up. And I can't see myself really wanting to work with any else except this guy. He's amazing.
So what did he bring out in the band that wasn't there before he started working with you guys?
I'll say it like this. So I write all the songs, and I struggled with confidence in writing. I think a lot of musicians really do, but like I particularly struggle with confidence and presenting music. Having a person like Dave Schiffman in the room is really, really intimidating. Like this guy's worked with real legends. This guy's worked with real artists that are world renowned, and I'm little old Denzel from Toronto that nobody's heard of yet. But what he does is he has a no ego approach. He really, really makes people comfortable in the room, really, really made us feel comfortable. Like we were supposed to do this record a long time ago, but like, and he stayed in touch with us, like while I was going through my crazy phase, because I couldn't make music. I was going through a huge writer's block and I just wasn't feeling anything. And he just stepped in touch with us, kept supporting us. And when we finally started, we're ready to make some music and make some different things. The way he presents ideas to push the band to go higher is just in the best ways. He really, really is a wordsmith, and he delivers advice and information that you can choose to take or not take in the way that you can receive it. And that was the best. Like, I can't imagine. Like, I've never had that in my life. Anybody comment on my songs and say it in a way that doesn't automatically put my guard up. Anybody said anything, I was like, what the F you talking about? I don't want to hear anything. And then I'll go cry in my room. But like with him, like he says it to me in a way that like, I don't even know how to word it, but it's in a way that I could really appreciate, and it's delivered in a way that I don't find offensive. And it really helped me become a better songwriter.
It sounds like, if I could interpret that a little bit, it sounds like he was a musical mentor. Like he's allowed you to express yourself. He's given you permission to grow, but also to reject his advice in a respectful manner.
Absolutely. I would say that is the most accurate. He's just a great guy. And everybody I know that's worked with him has said the same thing. Mm-hmm. Just a great guy.
Was there a lot of music in your house? Was your family a family that invested in music, had records and tapes and everything lying around?
Absolutely. Every Sunday or every evening, my mom would play the records, the vinyl, over and over through the house. And so sorry.
Yeah, no bong hits in the interview.
Right. Yes, please. Jesus Christ. Okay. Over and over, she'd play a lot of like records around through the house, you know, and a lot of disco, a lot of gospel, a lot of soul music, just over, a lot of Diana Ross, a lot of Michael Jackson, Isaac Hayes. So yeah, definitely music was embedded in the house. There were no real musicians though. I just kind of discovered that on my own. I used to write little songs in my journal, not my diary, my journal when I was growing up. And I kind of just turned that into a love for musical instruments, like brass instruments particularly. I went to school for music. And after that, I found out that I'm the only person here that doesn't really play a cool and sexy instrument like the guitar or the piano. You know, the instruments that people appreciate. I played the loud brass and nobody wants me to play anything at any time. So
especially your neighbors.
Nobody ever wants. My mom didn't want me to play anything. She didn't want me to thrive at that. So I decided to learn the guitar, and here we are. And then I started a band like a few months after that.
Mm-hmm. What's the average age of the guys in the OBGMs?
31.
So records still were quite a
things,
quite good things. They were,
yeah. We said we have some.
Obviously, the music you just described, you know, Diana Ross, a lot of soul in there. I'm not hearing a lot of punk. Where did that happen?
I would say it happened in my mom's basement with my sister. She was discovering new music, and I really remember her just going through like Yahoo Music and finding artists. And she put me on to bands like The Strokes, Death From Above, Billy Talent. And I started producing around the same time. And I was like, I really, really like this loud stuff and I want to do more. But I also, at that time, we were talking about like mid 2000s, early 2000s now. At that time, there was a lot of sampling in music. Mm-hmm. And to be somebody that's good at that, you had to just know more about music. So I went through a whole bigger deep dive of records I could find, CDs I could find, and artists I would love. Growing up, just take a little segue, growing up, like in my community, we weren't really listening to rock. It was very strongly detested and rejected. So any rock song I would, or punk song I would listen to, I had to do it like very, very quietly in my room. Finding those bands like the early 2000s, mid 2000s and onwards was really like kind of like my coming out party with a lot of music and saying like, oh, you know what? I openly like Nirvana. I openly like the Killers. I openly like Arctic Monkeys, you know? And the last two bands I found out before I started a band was a Toronto band named The Carps. And another band that's probably my favorite band of all time is NERD. And I was like, yo, these guys look like me. They're doing loud things and they're doing whatever they want. I can start a band too. And even before that, the Purple Rain record. I bought a Purple Rain record. And I was like, this is rock and roll over here. Prince does rock and roll. Prince plays guitar. He shreds on his guitar. He breaks stuff, and he's just a real rock legend, you know? So I just wanted to take over and do something the way we would do it, which would be more fused with, a lot of the patterns that we choose are a lot more soulful, a lot more hip hop cadences, a lot more danceable. And that's what we kind of want to infuse into this rock stuff, you know?
Now, let me ask, did you ever see Prince live?
Yes, I saw him twice. I saw him actually at the last Toronto show he did, and it was a religious experience. It was a piano and a microphone tour, and I just remember, man, I didn't have a lot of money, and I was like, oh, God, these tickets are so much. I need to sacrifice whatever I can to go to this concert, and I went with me and my fiance, and it was one of the moments that like we'll cherish forever. It was an incredible concert. And like a week later he passed, and I was so happy I was able to witness that, his greatness live one more time, you know. I would have never been able to forgive myself if I didn't see that.
I'd never seen Prince live. I mean, I've always appreciated Prince. I always appreciated him, but I just never made my way to a Prince show. And he came to Australia in February. I think he died in March, mm-hmm. and he came in February and did the piano and microphone tour. And I got tickets to see him, and I saw that show, and I was like, you know what? I've I've never seen Prince before, but I'm never going to miss him again. Anytime never. He comes to town, I'm going to have to see him. What a showman. This is incredible. And wouldn't you know it? God damn it. You know, a couple weeks later, he was
life,
gone.
Man. Life. I saw, like, before that, the year before, I saw him and the whole band at the ACC, the Air Canada Center, a big big venue over here in Toronto. And I was like, I just saw him last year, you know. Like, it was great. I don't know if I need to go to this one again. Had to. Like, any type of setting, this is a true musician over here. This is a true, does it all. So, like, he's, you're never going to be not satisfied seeing that guy. And it's great that he was here to show people the way.
Now, talk to me about the shows that you started to get involved in. At one point, it sounds like you had this secret punk infatuation. Did you go to shows at that point? Did you have to sneak out? Did you not tell your friends about them?
No. So the first show I ever went to was the Carp show in Toronto, the first rock show. The second show I ever went to was probably my own. I was so inspired to kind of do something with rock and punk and loud music. And there was something about watching these guys. They're amazing. They no longer exist. They've disbanded. But there's something so amazing about just watching these guys play, because I just saw myself on stage. Like, I was like, these guys are from me. These guys are from my walk of life. The Carps.
Okay.
Carps. All right. Yeah.
Are they a black fronted band too?
Black fronted band. They no longer this. They disbanded many years ago. I'm trying to get them to come back one more time because I feel like they just found it right when they stopped. They were just killers live. And I had a thing where I love seeing shows, but there's a part of me that is just, let's just call it what it is. I'm very, very envious because I'm like, I wish I could do that. I wish I could have these people here. I wish they would sing the words to my songs. Yada, yada. I need to go back and work at home right now so I can get to that. So that's what happens when I go to shows. I've seen a few good bands, had a few good shows. I've seen Billy Talent. There was a secret show at a venue called the Horseshoe Tavern. The first mosh pit I was ever in was there, and the way it went was a guy literally just turned around and said, hey, have you ever been to a rock show? I'm like, this is like my second one. And he's like, have you ever been in a mosh pit? I'm like, nah. He's like, I'm going to pick you up soon as the song starts. Are you ready? I'm like, sure you are. This guy picked me up so easily. Threw me over the top. It was like a feather. He picked me up so easily. I was so impressed. Threw me over the top of his head. Flipping Ben, the lead singer of Billy Talent, I was on the mosh pit, and people were pushing me on the stage. He grabbed my foot because it was going in his face, and he was singing at the same time. Never missed a note. It was incredible. It was incredible. I saw a lot of Metric shows. Those are probably the first sets of shows that I was going to actively outside of this, the local ones in Toronto.
Now, how often do you write? Is writing music a daily thing for you?
Yeah, it is. And it happens in a lot of different ways, right? I can't say I'm lyric writing every day, but what I do for myself is I try to make sure that I'm artistic every single day. So that happens in a lot of different ways. So for me, I go to the studio. I try to go there about 2 times a week. Right now, it used to be a little bit more. In records, when we're going down to record time, I'm around there 4 times, 5 times a week. Mm-hmm. But now I'm there about 2 times. So what I'll do is, like, throughout the week, I'll collect a bunch of voice notes. I'm a voice note hoarder. I'll do about 5 to 10 a day. And on studio days, I'll go through them and I'll record them all into my computer, my Logic. And we'll see what I come out of with it. And then that's it.
Voice notes. Are you saying, like, are you humming riffs? Are you giving lyrics?
I'm humming lyrics. I'm beatboxing lyrics. I'm beatboxing beats I want to do. Or I'm playing my acoustic guitar here and playing out how I want it to be. And I'm just trying to continuously write things. Or if I have a clever set of lines or a clever set of deliveries, or even a melody to how I want the lyrics to be placed, I'll be humming that into it, like, throughout the week. So every week I'll have like 50 that I have to work on. And I have probably like 10,000 voice notes that I haven't even listened to yet that I should listen to.
You know, it's good to collect them all, but it sounds like it's such a job. It must be such a job to weed through all those. How do you manage the quality? How do you manage from doing an okay song to pushing it further to make it a great song?
I think it's the conversation that people just have to have with themselves, and not being able to, not settling. I think for me, when I'm creating songs, I'm first just trying to find that crack loop. What that is the loop that everybody knows. This is the groove. This is the one that people really want to listen to.
The earworm.
That's it. That's the one. So when you find that, now you need to realize that that's like, for me, in my process, that's the first thing I even thought of. So if that's the first thing I ever thought of, the thing that I think everybody wants to listen to, there's a step two and a step three and a step four over here that can be worked. So there's different ways in finding out how to work within those, like different melody choices, different chord choices, and trying to keep it interesting in a way where people won't expect what the next note will be, or that you're even choosing those sets of notes. I think that's what I try to do the most. Like, even if you're playing the same riff for the whole record, it doesn't even matter. As long as it's a standout song delivered in a way that maybe nobody else would do or not often interpret, that's really what I'm trying to do.
So the OBGM, by the way, what does OBGM stand for?
It is the Ooh Baby Gimme Morris is our band name. I don't know why we made that our band name. We used to not hyphenate it at all. Or sorry, we used to never put it into the acronyms at all for many years. But it got very difficult because nobody knew how to spell our band name the way we spelled it. So we were like, all right, let's make it easier for everybody. Let's call it the OBGMs. Still a problem today. Don't worry about it. don't worry about it. Yeah.
I've got it spelled a few different ways here, as you can tell.
Bruh, I've been to the south of France, and there was our flipping room was the OBGYNs. You know what I'm saying? Like, I've been around the world, and people have made that mistake.
So you mentioned going to South France. How widely has the band toured?
We've been to Europe a lot. We've been throughout Europe. So we've been throughout France, throughout Spain, throughout Germany. Where else have we been?
So you guys have toured Europe. Denmark. You guys have toured the U.S.
Toured the U.S., yeah. Only a little bit in the U.S., though. We've only been to New York, Chicago, New York, Chicago, Philly in the States, and mostly just Eastern Canada, so all of Ontario, all of Quebec, pretty much. Mm-hmm. Most places we've got around in is Europe.
What's been one of your most memorable shows so far?
My favorite show of all time was there's a couple, but this is probably the biggest one. Was in Paris, Afropunk. It was just an incredible show. There's like packed room, and like everybody, those particular festivals, people like to dress to the nines, but we're a punk band. We make people mosh pit, so it doesn't matter if you're in your tailored suit and you want to be on Italian Vogue. We're gonna treat you the same way, and we're gonna make you collide into each other, right? So it was just one of the most memorable experiences I had, because we had like a lot of just beautiful people, beautifully dressed, moshing, pushing each other, fighting each other. It was great. Another show was, we did a show with Anti-Flag in Quebec, and that show was flipping wild in like Quebec City, Quebec. Those people love music. Another packed venue, like 1500 people all screaming our name by the end, like, and we were the opener. Like, it was just wonderful, because no matter where you go in the world, like, music connects people. It doesn't matter if they don't speak your language primarily. None of that matters. It doesn't matter if they look like you, all that type of shit. None of that shit matters. Mm-hmm. It's, do they mess with the shapes you are making on your guitar or on your drums? And if that's a yes, your language doesn't matter. And it really, really unifies all different types of people.
Now, the first album you guys made, 2017, the OBGMs, you were a quartet. Now you're a trio. What was that evolution like?
The long and the short is that when you're in a band, you're dealing with a lot of different people, a lot of different personalities, and even my own struggles internally. And if you're always trying to do something in a democracy, it may not work because there are a lot of chefs in the kitchen. So in that time, like between 2017 and now, when the records were to come out, like, I was honestly going to give up on music. Like, we did our last tour in February or of 2018, and I was like, or like February to March of 2018, something like that. And by the end of it, I was like, this sucks. Like, we are doing a lot of good shows and yada yada, but like, we can't finish songs the way everything is structured because of everybody's schedule, everybody's level of commitment, everybody's everything, and my own issues with presenting music. So my own issues are, at the time, and even now, I'm working through it more now, but back then, especially, anytime I would make a lick, anything on the guitar, any type of thing on the guitar, and I would present it to the band. That's how our band work. I present it. This is what I like. This is where we're going to go with it. If that didn't immediately take off in the way I wanted it to, I would scrap it. I would scrap it completely. And it just led to like just stagnance. I was like, yo, we're never working together. We're never doing anything together. And we can't make music the way it is. So I am not happy.
It sounds like you were tying your creativity to other people's opinions of it.
Oh God, that is, wow. I wish I said it like that. That's exactly what I was doing. And that was just bullshit. Like, it's not how you make music. Like, I wasn't making it for the right reasons, and I needed to take time off to find out what that was. And when I found out what that was, I came back to the band. I was like, yo, this is what's going to be. And that's just the way it is.
I'm very glad, Denzel, that sometime in the last few years, you've discovered fuck you.
Oh, yeah. 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 So you paid attention. Listen, the last song in the album, Move On, is about breaking up the band. Listen, man, I don't give a shit anymore. Like, I don't give a shit. Like, it is what it is, man. Like, when I found that inner fuck you to everything and everybody that's not down with the vision, like, it's been so freeing. I feel like I found my purpose in this whole thing, and I'm so sad it took me so long to figure out, but I found out what I needed to, and it's great. You don't like us? Well, fuck you. You should. If you don't, whatever, man. It's a you thing. I just love it. I can do whatever I want. I can make whatever type of music I want. I don't want to stay in these stupid ass boxes. I want to just break shit. and do cool things. Fuck everything.
What influences your songwriting more, positive events or negative ones?
I don't know. I would say that my, like, so I go through waves, super super emotional waves, and they can be affected by positivity or negativity. So I do incorporate both of those things into songwriting. I would say that if we're going to take a look at what we have right now out for you to see, it's often almost only negative events. This album is about the end of all things. Went through a hard set of years, dealt with death, bad problems and everything. And like wanting to like figure out why I've wasted the last like 12 years of my life in a band, you know? And like, we just made a great album themed on it, on the end being the end. That's it. But I have a lot of happy songs too, mm-hmm. to show people.
Just not on this record. Is that the
is there any on I don't think there is. I don't think there is.
If it turns out like a great year for you, if the album's received really well, the OBGMs do fantastic, everything positive's happening, are you going to be able to do another album like this one?
Oh, absolutely. Well, that's the thing. Do I even want to do another album like this one? It would be my first question. The music I'm making right now, which is like a whole year removed from this album, I would say it's still in line sonically, but that can change. I delete things often. Right now I've been dealing with this year. There's just a lot of inspiration. I don't think 2020 is a year where people lack inspiration for writing, you know?
Yeah, if you like negativity, then 2020 is your year.
2020 is the year. So if anything, we're just going to do a better album now. Like, I did that when I didn't have problems. Now I got real 2020.
So let me ask you, are the OBGMs political at all?
Political. Engineering word. Are we engaged in politics? Are we informed in politics?
Or do politics reflect inside your music? Is there something that you want to say or share about the wider powers that be?
Yeah, I would say it like this. In our lyrics today, for the music that people have seen and heard, which is all I can speak about, not the new shit, us being ourselves is a political statement in itself. We are a black-fronted punk band. Me making this loud shit in this community where they don't often see us, they don't often promote us in the same ways, they don't often place us in the same ways, they don't definitely don't fucking treat us in the same way, is a statement of its own. I don't necessarily need to say anything directly leaning to anything, because when I walk into the room, I am that. and that's what it is, right? A lot of people, when they listen to the OBGMs, they'll question our validity in rock or punk music in a lot of different subtle and very, very highly racist ways. What does that mean? I post our songs on our social media accounts or on alternative social media accounts, and we'll often get dozens and dozens of comments that say, yeah, you know, the OBGMs are cool, but they're not a punk band. They're not one of us. They're like XYZ. They're not one of us. They're cool, but they're not one of us. And people don't often understand how that delegitimizes the band, because they don't say that about The Clash. They don't say that about the Flippin' Clash, the Flippin' Ramones. They don't say that about them. Two different bands, Cro-Mags, Flippin' Bad Brains, way different bands, way different sphere of bands. But The Clash made friggin' Rock the Casbah. They're still one of the biggest punk bands of all time. So our statements are basically just being ourselves in this space and making people pay attention to us and value us for our music. Now, if it gets to actual politics, that's something that we save for our conversations as of right now for the music that you've heard. If you ever go to our social media, you'll know where our positions lie. And that's what I can say about that.
Now, your bio says the OBGMs are a black-fronted punk rock band that demands your attention.
Yes.
The very first line. Now, clearly you've got my attention. Is it important to call out that you're black-fronted?
It is for me. It's a very, very important thing, because my blackness shouldn't be taboo. It shouldn't be something that we should dance around. Like, we know it. We know it's in the room. We don't need to pretend like it's there. And I'm something I'm very, very proud of. I love being a black man. I love being a black person in a band that is fronted by black people in a space that's not often fronted by black people. And what 2020 has taught us is that there's been a whole socio-political, economic revolution that has taken place today, and in a point where black people can talk about blackness in a way where, hey, other people from other walks of life shouldn't be offended by it. And most of them now aren't offended by it. They can listen to me talk about black stuff, issues I deal with being black, and yada, 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 and know that it's not a condemnation of them. And that's wonderful. That's wonderful, because that's all I want to do. All I want to do is play music in this diverse space and do whatever the F I want to do, make people mosh of all different. I don't give a fuck who you are. But I also want to be myself and what I am as a black man, and what I am as a black man trying to lift black people doing black things, and be cool with that. So that's why we pointed out, and we'll point it out every single time, we're a black fronted punk band. You should look at us. You already know this is us. Now take us in.
Now, these days, especially out of the U.S. and the news, we're seeing a lot of overt racism, a lot of disrespect, flaunting of privilege, overall lack of empathy for people of color and women. And that's just from the White House. Do you experience that sort of behavior in Toronto to a similar level?
Absolutely. I'm a black person everywhere I go. So that's such a deep question, because a lot of people often equate institutional racism to a United States thing, because they think of the transatlantic slave trade. Mm-hmm. They think, you know, black people were stolen from Africa and they were brought to mostly the United States and the Caribbean, and that's where the institutional effects of racism take place, and that's just fucking bullshit. I'm black everywhere I go. Everywhere I go, these institutions were built on on racism, they were built on racism. They thrived on racism, and we're not very far removed from that being economically uplifted directly. It's still economically uplifted to this day. So, yes, absolutely. As a black person in Toronto, friendly as Toronto, friendly as Canada, that pretends to be the most friendly nation in the world, very, very inclusive on a lot of different things, absolutely face persecution from the police, still fear for my life from police, still walk on police. Even when I'm around police, they unclip their guns, which just happened a couple weeks ago. This is just the life I live. If I walk on a street, people are still trying to cross the street from me. And if I am trying to thrive in a business that is a black business, I'm still facing a lot of glass mirrors in which I cannot get through without a white ally. But like, it is what it is. Racism takes a lot of different types of effects, and it's about how we deal with that and dealing with it in a professional way and dealing with it with the allies that we have. Love it. Love that I'm located where I am because I'm dealing with partners that believe in us and also are not afraid of working with us, which is something that is another end of this thing. You're dealing with guys that are not afraid to speak on these issues. It takes a certain type of thick skin to hang with us, it takes especially business-wise. Like, not everybody's comfortable with the things that we're saying, the things that we do. But everything we do is for the right reason. Everything we do is to uplift people. And how it's presented, it shouldn't impact anybody else negatively. But a lot of people have to consider if they really want to work with a band that's as outspoken as us.
I would imagine, you know, being a musician, being part of the artistic community, that group is a lot more open to all sorts of influence and contributions from people of all walks of life. Are you finding that there still is an overt racism or there is a difference in dealing in the music communities?
Yeah, absolutely. I would say that music itself, the concept of music itself, and this is what escapes a lot of people, the concept of music itself is math. You're literally just making shapes on an instrument that produce sound, and you're trying to see if that pleases somebody's ear. That in itself has nothing to do with race, religion, sex, gender, whatever it is at all. However, after we make these shapes with our instruments and bring them to the people, how they consume it is, unfortunately, it's a business that is built on racism. So how does music get from one place to another? How does it get there? How did you find out about us? Let me just describe the industry in a nutshell. If we're looking at radio stations' businesses are based off of ad buys and music being delivered to them by a lot of major labels. That's where they get their funding from. They have to prove that people will listen to them. They can't afford for people to turn away or tune out of them, or they are in a position where they aren't able to obtain money. Okay, great. So if they want to make money, they need to have people tuning into them as much as possible. So they need to place a bet on acts that they think people will tune into a lot. And also the acts that are being provided to them from sources of revenue. A lot of those acts that are being chosen all look and sound the same because we're placing the same bets. And you'll see a lot of acts that look like me, that sound like me, that people won't take that same gamble on. Why? Because we don't have access to revenue. We don't have access to different types of resources. We don't have access to the same networks that were grandfathered in by a lot of people that have generational wealth and generational experience on these things. That's called systemic racism. However, we're also extremely vocal about it. What we do about that, instead of just complaining and whining, is we build our own thing. I've worked relentlessly on connecting a lot of different black, indigenous, people of color bands with each other. So they just know each other, for one, but two, can collaborate with each other and start pushing each other's music up forward. We don't need to rely on any particular type of industry to uplift our music. We can just do it our motherfucking selves. and because at the end of the day, systemic racism is built on is a capitalistic approach, capitalistic views. And it's just about this money. If we all get to the money and control the resources, we can all buy our own seats at the table or build our own seats on the tables with our own resources.
The way that I discovered the OBGMs, I literally get between 50 and sometimes 100 songs a day, like records or someone sending me some sort of promo link that's saying, check this out, da, 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 yeah. And book the show, blah, 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 blah. This came through a PR agent that I have high respect for. And and so whenever she brings me something and says it's good, I certainly give it a listen. And
nice.
She's always right. And so
that's awesome.
So to me, I think it's important along the tactics that you've just shared, the strategy that you've just shared, word of mouth, quality finds a way. And so if you keep doing what you're doing and you keep putting your heart into it and, you know, you keep getting connected with good people who are advocates for you, then it will definitely find a way.
I agree. I do think word of mouth can take you so far. I think money can take you even further. And when you put them together in bed, you make a baby. That's called OBGMs.
Very good. So Denzel, 2020's a write-off. What do you think 2021 is going to look like for OBGMs?
I think 2020 is our year, to be honest. Like, we're killing it. I would say 2021, I don't honestly predict that people are going to be touring until the end of the year. If I'm being real, I'm very, very pessimistic on a return to normalcy right now. So I think what we have to do is we have to plot a path forward in one that is presented and realistic. What does that mean? We have to continue making music and trying to get the word of mouth out there through this big ocean of everybody that's making the same music by pushing it online. Being creative with how we present information and making connections with people that believe in us. I think, honestly, when there is a return to normalcy, which I hopefully is the end of 2021, 2022, I think we'll come up on another record. Right now, we're already preparing to go back to the studio, back in the box around November, December-ish. And we're just going to keep on pushing, man. We just have to because there's no plan B out here.
I'm in Australia. And we're already starting to see some live shows pop up. We've been able to manage the virus to a point to where we could start to see. Now, they're not like they used to be, obviously. Yeah. A lot of the bands, they're smaller bands. They're playing, rather than one show for 300 people, they're doing two or three shows a night. So
that's interesting.
Yeah, they may have a 5 p.m. show, a 7 p.m. show, and a late show, whatever. And they're limited to 50 people. Everyone's kind of got their table. There's no mosh pits at this point, but at least the industry is starting to kind of find a way.
That's interesting. I've not thought of that.
Yeah.
Thank you. I'm going to start it here.
and it gets you out there. It gets you playing. It gets people are sorely needing some sort of time out, some sort of entertainment, right? And
yes, sir.
I think 2021 is the year of the up and coming bands because there's not going to be stadium acts. We're not going to see Foo Fighters filling whatever 50,000 seat stadium they have. Yeah, we're not going to see those. But what we're going to start seeing is clubs, smaller gigs, that sort of thing. And so I think this is the time for up and coming bands to own their local scene and to build this foundation that's set for growth once the vaccine is created and we can all go back to normal.
Yeah, that's wonderful, man. Like I before you said that, I was thinking that completely opposite, as in thinking that I think there's a pathway back for the larger bands, because where we are right now, the larger bands are able to do shows at drive-ins. If there is a way back for the smaller artists like us, by all means, like, I think we would ride that wave.
You know what?
We'd be surfing on here.
This is very similar to when the asteroid hit the Earth, right? And not to call the Foo Fighters dinosaurs, but I'm saying the smaller acts have a greater chance of longevity and building a scene than the bigger ones. And so I think 2021 could be your year. That's where I'm betting.
Yes, let's and, bet. Let's bet together, please. Manifest that.
And
say it again. Manifest.
So, Denzel, I'm really looking forward to our next conversation when this whole thing is over and there's another record and another set of successes for the OBGMs and hopefully an Australian tour in your future.
Holy crap. I would love that. There's the one comment that sticks with me for my life is one that a producer named Adrian Goh said to me, basically said, the reason why people are doing this music hit isn't the play in the cold outside. It's to chase the sun around the world. That's what you really want to do. I'm like, oh my God, that's exactly what I want to do. I want to find where summer is and tour there. Come on, I'm trying to chase the sun around the world, baby. So,
Let's quickly talk about the ends. It's on vinyl. There's 250 units of this splatter vinyl of the ends. Tell me a little bit about that.
This is our first time doing vinyl. Incredible. I've always wanted to hold one for us. I'm going to put it next to my other favorite vinyl, which is my favorite record growing up, which was a Two of Hearts. Anyways.
Two of Hearts.
I'll put it next to
Two of Hearts.
Is two
that
hearts.
Juice Newton? Anyway,
put it next to my Michael Jackson Bad vinyl. Put it next to my Purple Rain vinyl, you know?
Are there going to be more? If this 250 sells out, are there going to be more, or is this it?
No, fuck that, man. We're going to do those ones. If you didn't get those 250, you're not going to get it. And that's it. That's going to be the vintage one. So when we talk later down the line, 10, 20 years down the line, when I am a dinosaur, we'll talk about the splatter one.
That's going to be part of my retirement portfolio. Okay,
absolutely.
So aside from the ends, what other music are you listening to? What other artists do you have in your playlist or your record player at the moment?
Jesus, that list goes deep. I would say I'm listening to the Nova Twins. They are fire. They're out of the UK. Definitely people should listen to them. Listening to Oxymorons. That's OXYMORRONS. Love those guys. Danny Denial, Troy Irons, King Youngblood. Those are the Black Rock, BLAQROCK. Though Claremont II, some hip hop stuff. He's awesome. Those are the acts I'm mostly listening to right now, man. Oh, Jarrell the Young. That's another one. He's sick. Jarrell, J-A-R-R-E-L, the Young. I think those are a bunch of different alternative types of acts that are doing something different and breaking boundaries in music that if people mess with us, they should fuck with them because they're great.
All right, so I'll definitely post those in the episode page as well as a link to get the OBGM's album, The Ends. There's 250 units on splatter vinyl. Get in while the getting's good. The Ends is out October 30th. I think you could also preload it in your Apple Music or your Spotify so you can be notified when it's available. Denzel, do you mind if I play a track from the album here on the show?
Oh, yeah, you can go ahead and play it. Which one are you going to play? Play Elsa.
Oh, that's the opener, right?
Yeah, that's okay. The number one, track number one.
Okay, let me go through. I'm going to find a track, but I want to play something a little special for everyone, just to give them a little bit of a taste. There's some videos online, of course, if you want to hear more and even see Denzel and the OBGMs. But again, this is a band I'm betting we're going to continue hearing great things of. The OBGMs.com. Denzel, thank you so much for coming on the Vinyl Guide.
Thank you very much, sir. Thank you very much.
have it, the album opener, Outsaw from the OBGMs. Earlier in the episode, we had a little clip of Not Again, another great song from the album, but it's just chock full of great songs. So again, go to theobgms.com. There'll be links there. Grab one of the splatter vinyls quick if they're still available, but keep your eye out for this band. Denzel, thank you so much for coming on the show. And that is it for this week's episode of The Vinyl Guide. Thanks again for tuning in. Please share these episodes on your social media. That is so important and so appreciated. Put it out on Facebook, Instagram, Twitter, whatever. And of course, leave us a positive review on Apple iTunes or Stitcher or wherever. 5 out of 5, 10 out of 10, say something nice. That is always appreciated. We'll be back shortly with a brand new episode. So until we talk next time, keep spinning. Cheers.
That's it for this episode of The Vinyl Guide. Send your thoughts to Nate at thevinylguide.com or follow or tag us on Instagram @vinylguide. Until next time, keep spinning.